You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it was not, and it had to be done, it must be done, you got it done. Because you don't procrastinate. You do it. You get it done. And of course, you did it safely. You wore your mask. You kept your distance. Your hands was clean. And that's why we love you. Stay safe. Be for real. Stay safe. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. And then the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. And of course, this is the new year, so we got to get the new year's programs on the list. So, other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays, this evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with hosts Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, at 7, from 7 to 9, on Thursday from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Bonisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Fridays at 8 p.m. Saturday, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council from 7 to 9. On Sunday at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the call-in number is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. All the products that are produced are produced by us. And brother, just go on there, and sister, go on that line, on that website, and buy some things from us, for us, and support us. Also, too, once again, you know they're asking for contributions to establish a supermarket here in the Atlanta area where our farmers who produce a lot of the good produce will be selling their goods at the supermarket along with other manufacturers or producers of whatever those things are, you know. So we need that. But we need it in every city. We need it wherever we are. We need to be buying amongst ourselves. We need to establish strip malls where there is a supermarket, a convenience store, all the things that we need, all the things that everything that we want or need will be provided. We need that. Excuse me. You may need to drink some tea, some hot tea. I'm like, settle that. All right, Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani, give him a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. He has an upcoming trip going to Senegal and Gambia. All the trips are still on. They're still on, particularly in, you know, the fact that Africa is receiving us, even though you know what it is. The coronavirus is ravaging more here in the U.S. than probably anywhere around the world. And it's not happening too much, particularly in some of the African countries, particularly in Central Africa or Southern Sub-Saharan. But South Africa, of course, they have a variant, a mutation that is really supposedly stronger and more contagious. So Senegal and Gambia, April 2nd through the 12th, all these $3,700 per person is the cost. May 24th to June 4th, Ghana. And then November 18th through the 29th, Tanzania. And that's a good one to go on. And so give Brother Bomani a call or contact him, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see pictures, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Africa for the Africans. Baba Rinoco does not have a trip upcoming, but he has some webinars and some Zoom conferences. And so I will announce those. He has a couple upcoming. And here is one he has on February 6th. Great African historians. And it's $20, but it's $15 for early birds. If you want to get in. Until February 1st. After that, it's $20. It is Saturday, February 6th, 2021, from 11 a.m. on a Zoom. That's one. And then he has one with Baina Bello coming up, my good sister Baina Bello of Haiti. And they have a conversation, you know, an evening with Dr. Baina Bello and Dr. Rinoco Rashidi. That is Friday, February 12th, 2021, from 8 p.m. until 9:30. And that's another Zoom conference. I don't have the details. I'll get them. It's a one-on-one interview. And then his return, and that's coming up next weekend, Return to the Nile Valley with Dr. Rinoco, a Zoom lecture. And it's 90 minutes with question and answer. Part one will be Friday, this coming Friday from 8 to 9:30. And then part two will be Saturday, 11 a.m. to 12:30. And these are Eastern times, even though Baba Rinoco, of course, is in L.A. And it's $25 for both sessions. So $25, you get both sessions free if you're a patron. I'm a patron. But I got another thing I got to deal with. And so, Rinoco has those upcoming. I'll give you more details on the Zoom. And I think one of you can contact Eventbrite. You can contact Eventbrite. Let me see where.
I know I had one here for Baba Rinoco. I'll find it and make sure I give you that pertinent information. So that's what Baba Rinoco is up to. Once again, he is may not travel this year. That's deep, isn't it? But that's how it is. Okay? Habashah, HabashahIncorporated.org. Habashah, helping Africans by establishing schools at home and abroad. Habashah. And the work that they are doing here with the all the things they're doing here, particularly with the sustainable seeds, the golden growers, Habashah Works, all of these programs that these brothers and sisters are doing. And of course, Habashah is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. That's what Habashah is about. And of course, Habashah, they have a mission, and that's what it is. Habashah Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. And of course, the Kashi Project that is happening in Ghana. It is still going on. It's still being built, from what I understand. And so please, brothers and sisters, go online to HabashahIncorporated.org. HabashahIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group. Land for Environmental Development of Group Economics. The Ledge Group, where they deal with the four things that are important to human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have they have 12 projects going on the continent in 6 countries, employing over 170 people, and they have 260 members, and they need more. They need you. They need you to be a member and help contribute to this outstanding program. That's the Ledge Group. Go online, theledgegroup.com. Theledgegroup.com. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia, who's doing outstanding work in Haiti, and she deserves to be supported. Sanjay-Haiti.org, where the beautiful things that they do with the children in terms of education, health, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. Just a beautiful thing. Brothers and sisters, go online to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay dash Haiti. Akaban Institute, Baba Barudi and Mama Ya have been doing an outstanding job of raising and developing young warriors. And of course, please support that effort by donating, sending your check or money order to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. I'm going to continue to say that. You know why? Because there might be somebody out there like me who's old school and will send the money in. Although I have to admit, I do send Baba Barudi and Mama Ya through PayPal or Cash App. So Cash App, $YAA, the letter M, and then Barudi, B-A-R-U-T-I. And you can make that donation monthly. That would be greatly appreciated, whatever the amount that is. Also, too, they have their program upcoming on February 6th. the Sister Circle. Mama Ya has a program at 4 p.m. to 6, from 4 p.m. to 6. And the topic is When a Woman Heals. The donation is $10 and $5 for the teens. And, of course, what you do is you give the pertinent information. You can do PayPal. If PayPal is yabarudi at yahoo.com. If it's Cash App, $YAMBarudi. Okay. And Quarterly Sister Circle, your name, your email address, where the streaming link can be sent to. Okay? And then Baba Barudi, his program is from 12 noon to 3. From 12 noon to 3, the essentials of rites of passage, establishing effective rites of passage programs. Establishing effective rites of passage programs. That's, again, that is Saturday, February 6th, from 12 noon to 3. And the donation is $20 for brothers, warriors, men, and warriors in training is $10. And, of course, the include your information, the pertinent information is the fifth quarter men's gathering, quarterly men's gathering, your name, and the email address where you want the information, the linked information sent to. Also, too, for the books and so forth, go to AckermanHouse.com, AckermanHouse.com for the amount of books. Well, he's a prolific writer of books that Baba Baruti has have written. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Let me read this that Baba Baruti sent out, and then I'm going to get into the 2 days of the Inye Sesim. I read what the Inye Sesim is and so forth. But here he writes, each day, warriors need words that give them cause to consider the significance of what they must do. Each day, dedicated revolutionaries must articulate and refine the nature of their service to African people. Each day, centered workers deserve to have their thoughts recognized and their intent validated by minds of like spirit. Each day, those who live and would live for us should be reminded that they will never be alone and their thoughts are those of every other member of the warrior class. It is seasoned. Elderly warriors and most deserving and honored ancestors, they will find their sustenance of these affirmations here in this calendar every day. The Inye Sesim, Volume 2. Give you an understanding why this is happening, why we do the Inye Sesim, why I read it every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. January 24th. There is far more honor in dying like a free man than living like a slave. T. Thomas Fortin. Many inquiring minds seriously want to know how we reach this new era of spiritual, social, and cultural pacification. They should know that it has been a long, treacherous journey. It took us through the frigid, barren caves of Europeans' mind, Yorugu's mind, an insanity-inducing process which birthed us as disconnected, deformed, ignorable beings imprisoned in this deceptive Western reality. What they have done to African people is unforgivable. Let me say that again. What they have done to African people is unforgivable. Yorugu knows this and desperately, delusionally runs from the consequences of their evil genius through a manufactured, directionless, desanitized, sterile, endless progress. The funny thing is that they, because they have not yet been prosecuted, because they still have more than most and walk the earth fairly unhindered, they have actually come to believe that they have gotten away with genocide. They have utterly convinced themselves that they have meaningfully and permanently disconnected us, the rightful inheritors of a divine righteous rage from ancestral memory. Equally important, they have, they have bet their Caucasian supremacist aspirations on their science, on their military, and their God being craftier than universal karma. Yorugu cannot stop what is coming. They do not want to stop it, for they actually believe that they can't escape anything. Therefore, as long as they rule, they will continue doing as they do because chaos is their only stability. Reality is their only stable reality, chaos. And because menticide limits broken minds through the most wretched, useless definitions of power, as something existing outside of themselves and the sole possession of their enemies, many of us foolishly believe likewise, damn it. And those of us who will, and those of us who do, will suffer accordingly. Affirm, I will not die as a slave, as a captive. Affirm, I will not die as a slave. January 25th, we don't sleep at one side and fight for the other side. the Akan proverb. Debate over the natural, racial, cultural, spiritual orientation of the product of a Caucasian-African coupling continues to rage. And of course, you see it all the time when you watch television. All the commercials, particularly with us, with an American African woman or African woman and a Caucasian man, and then of course their offspring. You see it all the time. Sane frontliners recognize that the answer can never be found by those whose science keeps them oblivious to spirit. Moreover, there are multiple historical exceptions to every conclusion because of the confusion individualism brings to those inhabiting Ryugu's reality. Regardless, the most political courageous search for answers within spiritual and cultural realms, because while the first is everywhere, static, constant, and unchanging in its presence and purpose, the second subject is the first to human desecration and agency. Because all human thought develops within the social realm, i.e., there is no more such a thing as absolute individual subjectivity than there is an absolute scientific objectivity. The significance of cultural influence cannot be ignored. So the impact of spirit must be examined within the context of the cultural ruling to individuals' interpretations of reality. Four, as always, culture determines how we see and feel what we see and feel and how we decide to use it. We know that the African and the Yorugu cultural Asili cannot equally share space in one's mind because there are irreconcilable differences. Only one can rule. So, in this unnatural anti-African reality, in order to answer the question of whether the African or the Yorugu cultural Asili wins in the children's of interracial coupling, we have to know the person's mentality. The only point we can make is that even given the African's biological corruption, if the African cultural Asili is chosen, then there is the potential to gain spiritual strength. If not, then a despiritualized weakness prevails. Affirm, I do not pretend to be African while sleeping with Yorugu. Let us say it again. Affirm, I do not pretend to be African while sleeping with Yorugu. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. We have a lot of stuff for you today. We're going to talk about economics. We're going to talk about economics. I'm going to play that piece again by the Caucasian Howard Nicholas, boastfully in his arrogance, talking about why Africa must be kept poor. And we must be kept poor. You know, that is the divine right. But one of the persons that talks consistently and has for many years, decades, about African economic development, African empowerment, and so forth. You know, now, of course, you know, I believe that, you know, economics is not power. Money is not power. Politics and voting is not power. Education information is not power. You know, I love that definition by Dr. Wade Nobles of what power is. Power is none of those things. Because the education information that we have been receiving is flawed and inaccurate. It's lies upon lies. You know? It's not designed by us, for us. It's designed by Yorugu for us to keep us in this mental state. So education information, no power. Politics, well, you know, we just did a thing with election here in Georgia, and elected a brother who said that one of his main things, Reverend Raphael Warnock, said, is to support Israel. Came out strong in the support of Israel and what they have done to African people. Well, of course, too, if you're religious, if you're Christian, rather, you know, if you're serious about if you're serious about your Christianity, then yes, you are definitely supporting Israel. Man. And so the politics, you know, voting and so forth, no real power. We have more people who are in political office today, and yet our condition is worse collectively. You know, no power from that. Money, finances, we don't control anything. We don't control the money. We don't control the finance. Locally, nationwide, globally, we don't control it. You know? So we cannot get real power from money. Now, granted, had I won that $1 billion the other day, boy, oh boy, I always said that. You know, I would love to see a Pan-Africanist win that kind of big money, and what we could do, at least promote the idea of One Africa, promote the idea of going home, promote the idea of kicking the folks, all the others who ain't African, out, so we can build Africa and make it a place for us, as a place of refuge, as a place of a home, no matter where we are. So if you want to stay here, stay here. You want to stay wherever you are, stay there. But you know that we have a home. And then you begin to treat Africa like the European Jews treat the stolen land of Israel, that no matter where they are, they support that and they send money to it. That's why Israel's so well armed and well financed and does what it hell of it wants to do because of the support of this country specifically. So no power from that. So what is power? Power is the ability to define reality. I like to keep that right there, especially for us, because that's what I want us to do. Define reality, shape it and fashion it in our image and interest based on our historical knowledge, our cultural knowledge. That's power. Shaping and fashioning reality in our image and in our interest. But there's another part of that definition that Dr. Wade Knowles says. Power is the ability to define reality and then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. That's what Europeans have done. They define reality, and we have accepted their reality as if it's our own. And that's why we are in the condition that we are in, because we have accepted their reality and we continue to do so. We have accepted their reality as if it's our own. And we don't challenge ourselves to shape and fashion reality in our image and in our interest. And that's what must be done. But Dr. Claude Anderson, who's been talking about powernomics and other things, I remember he came to our training session of black firefighters down in New Orleans before Katrina. See, and that lets you know how long ago that was. It's before Katrina. But he asked the question, what is racism? I raised my hand immediately because, of course, I've done workshops on what is racism, you know. And so, in fact, I got some functional definitions of racism, you know. About 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 definitions. Francis Cress Welsing, Dr. Amos Wilson, Milana Karinga, Dr. Anderson Thompson, Dr. Bobby Wright, as well as Webster's Unabridged Dictionary. So I whipped out a couple of them do know by memory. One of them was Milana Karinga, you know, racism. Racism is not an attitude. Racism is a system. It's not an attitude. Racism is a system, and it's a system of defamation, denial, and destruction of a people's culture and history and right to freedom based primarily on the false concept of race. That's right. Race is a false concept. And you can look up Carol Linnaeus and Johann Blumenbach and some other. I read about another Caucasian here in the States who was part of that, who had a number of skulls that he measured. And these skulls, based upon his thinking and rationality, that if they were bigger, they'd have more possibility of acquiring more knowledge because they couldn't expand. And so Caucasians devised the concept of race. They created the concept of race, giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. So they devised the concept of race, giving themselves the top position, everybody else a lower position, with us at the lowest position. You can see that being played out around the world to this very day. In many countries, you have a population who may be the indigenous population. They had probably been to that area first as human beings, but they're relegated to a subservient position. In India, the Dalit people or the untouchables, in what is now called Australia and other parts of the world, Vietnam, in Brazil, where they have those like soap operas on TV, you know. All of the people and all the main characters are Caucasian. Although there was a sister who, very pretty sister, older sister, she cracked it. But she's supposed to be like a servant, but she's strong in that position. You know, it's like a no take, no answers and that kind of thing, but she's still a servant. Because why? That's what, you know, in their mindset, darker skinned people are reserved for. And I guess in her mindset, well, I got something, you know, and it's a part that she has some dignity. That's what she believes. So Dr. Claude Anderson in The Path to Economic Power for the African Community. Dr. Claude Anderson is one of the best. Oh, by the way, Dr. Claude Anderson, when he was at the conference, he said, if anybody gives me a definition, I don't know, $100 or so, I don't know what he was offering. Like I said, I came up with the definition, that one and another one, and he, you know, kind of played me off. Okay. Dr. Claude Anderson is one of the best economic minds in the American African community. While the world is only just waking up to his philosophy after his appearance on Hidden Colors, the African conscious community has studied his work for years. Dr. Claude Anderson's YouTube videos have changed their way we think about reparations, rebuilding American African communities, and personal finance. Keep reading to learn more about Dr. Claude Anderson and why we call him both an educator and a liberator. Dr. Claude Anderson has a broad base of experience in expanding education, business, federal and state politics, and social reform. He has served as a state coordinator of education in Florida during the 1970s, which time he also founded the State Action Council, a coalition of American African leaders for political action in Florida. He went on to serve as Jimmy Carter, Assistant Secretary in the U.S. Department of Commerce. You know, Carter served from 76 to 80. Dr. Anderson also became the first American African radio station owner in Tallahassee, Florida, and served as an executive director of two economic development corporations for the city of Miami. A special assistant to the 1988 Democratic Convention, of course, the 1988 presidency was won by old man Bush, George Bush. But as an assistant to the Democratic Convention, he awarded 37% of the contracts to American Africans, a record that has not been reached or broken since then. So all the many other years and all the Democratic, and especially how much we as American Africans have given to the Democratic Party. And this was 37%. And all of it, because I think it must be, and it almost happened the previous election through Trump, but it surely showed this election what American Africans and their election potential shows what we can do, especially sisters. But that's why Biden is in office. Biden Harris is in office. Currently, Dr. Anderson is president of the Harvest Institute, a nationally recognized think tank that works to help American Africans become self-sufficient and economically competitive. He is a Detroit native and holds a PhD in education from Wayne State. He has been featured on African History Network show, in Ebony Jet, in Business Wire magazines, and has made thousands of guest appearances across the country. Powernomics, the economic philosophy of Dr. Claude Anderson. The teaching of Dr. Claude Anderson has become the principal economic philosophy of the African conscious community for several reasons. Dr. Anderson's philosophy of reintegration of the fragmented American-African communities of the world match our philosophy of do for self. Anderson likens the effect integration to a person going through a metal detector at an airport security post. He likens integration and what happens at the checkpoint. That's right. You give up everything. You empty up everything. Take your damn shoes off the whole nine yards. But, you know, I'm down with security. So the person can only pass through it if he gives up his keys, his coins, his belt, his shoes, his briefcase, and his wallet and anything else. Like the person at the checkpoint, American Africans surrender all of their economic resources and even elements of our identity to pass through and be accepted into Caucasian society. But unlike the airport analogy, the things we give up that are so important to us are never returned. Dr. Claude Anderson has repeatedly expressed the need for building economic coalitions, economic empires, and collectives. In any competitive environment, an individual group who is non-competitive is sure to become extinct. Dr. Claude Anderson. Time is running out for American African men and women, and particularly the diaspora, to secure our financial future. With each drought and natural disaster, and with neocolonialism 2.0 becoming more of a reality every day, we come closer to the point of no return. In 1995 meeting of Philadelphia's African Chamber of Commerce, American African Chamber of Commerce, Dr. Claude Anderson had this to say. Unless American African people put together a coherent educational and economic strategy, they risk becoming a permanent underclass within 20 years. Now, he said this in 1995. American African business people will have to lead. We must build an alternative economic and educational system as soon as possible, which I surely agree. For 400 years, we have been in the lowest levels of a real-life monopoly game. You do not have enough wealth and power to be competitive, and time is running out on us. Dr. Claude Anderson has provided the American African community with a sensible blueprint for virtual integration of industries that matter to us. In this groundbreaking book, Powernomics, The National Plan to Empower the American African People, he places a great deal of importance on building industries in American African communities that are constructed upon group competitive advantages, group co-ops, sharing, bringing it together. American African labor in all its forms is becoming obsolete, he said, and therefore the need to create our own industries and employ members of our own community are imperative. Dr. Anderson's ideas should not be taken as the last word on group economics, but as the first word. We should have taken and ran with his ideas a long time ago by innovating, building American-African co-ops and new economic models, and by insulating our economy from the disasters of the global economy as a whole. And I agree. And I'm going to play this piece here by Dr. Claude Anderson. And I'm coming up on a break. I might be just in time for that break. But this is Dr. Claude Anderson.
If part of the problem is blacks not being able to have political power and certainly not being able to have economic power, then a part of that equation has something to do with what's happening to us educationally in this country. Where are we missing it, and where do blacks have to go to get it?
We're missing it educationally because we've never sat down and discussed the historical relationship between us and the educational system in this country. Mm-hmm. Remember, the educational system was designed on a public policy that's gone in a complete circle, 360 degrees. First of all, we were denied education. Then we moved from a denied educational basis to a desegregated education prior to the Civil War. Then we moved after the Civil War into segregated education. Then by the 1950s, we went back to desegregated education. And now we're back into a state of denial of education. Then I'm going to talk about dismantling the school system, going to voucher systems, going to some kind of private school system. Mm-hmm. What that means, Daryl, is that black folk fail to understand that that schools are not change agents. They're only doing what the environment wants it to do. Schools in this country, starting in the 1860s, were designed to create a manual labor force for whites, mm-hmm. society, period. Black folk became obsolete in the mid-1960s. They no longer need us as a labor class. So therefore, the schools are dysfunctional because they no longer need black folk. If we really want to make our schools functional, we have to come up with a national public policy about what we want our schools to do for black folk.
Isn't that a slap in the face to all the black educators and administrators in big cities across this country who are in charge of school systems?
No, it's not, because nobody's ever sat down with them and say where it is that black folk want to go. Suppose right now we want to, let's say if we had a national public policy on black folk, just as whites have always had a national public policy on us. They've had a policy on us, but we never had one for ourselves. About what is it that we want to do as black folk? Suppose right now we want to go to the moon. Then once we decide where we want to go in a public policy, then it becomes incumbent upon all those educators and all those school systems to say, now what must our school systems do in terms of instilling in our kids the attitudes, the skills, the competencies mm-hmm. to be able to get us to the moon?
Claude Anderson. And, you know, what I like to say about that is I don't think there's anything that we can do here. I would love for us to say, yes, there's one thing that we can do here, establish ourselves as an independent educational system. I've been, for the last number of years, firmly believe that we must control the education of our children at the young age, at the beginning stage, infusing them with knowledge of self, fortifying them with the belief of who they are and what they're about. And so then, once the process of that education, whether it is in middle school or maybe beyond middle school or high school, wherever that young man or woman goes, they know why they're going there and they know what they want to get, because by educating him or her in the belief of doing for ourselves, education for the liberation of African people, education for independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. That's the bottom line. That's it. It's not for a job. It's not to work at a place where, you know, you have the opportunity to have a penthouse office that overlooks the city or some other landscape, and that you have a tremendous ability to travel and all kinds of stuff like that. No. The education that our people must sacrifice, not for all the trinkets and the goodies of this system, this sick-ass system. It is to prepare us as African people, whether we want to stay here or anywhere we are, but prepare us to go home and to manage Africa's land, Africa's resources, and African production. I'm going to play a piece after the break. I played it, I think, a couple of weeks ago by this Caucasian, Howard Nicholas. And if you want to hear more of that, you can go to YouTube and put his name in or put in why Africa must remain poor. Because the Caucasian is saying what he's saying. And, you know, I'm a player, so you can tell me, you know, because they are committed. The European, the Caucasian is committed regardless of what, you know, Dr. Claude Anderson is saying, and I respect him, you know. But my contention is that because of this system, and it is not ours, it is theirs, and it's there for their benefit. The economics is so out of whack. There's nothing we can do here economically to impact. The disparity is so wide, you know, and it's been growing since the 80s when Ronald Reagan, globally, Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, when Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher got together and they changed the dynamics, the economic dynamics. No longer did workers, you know, kind of share in the wealth of the production. It was all about the 10% who controls everything, which created the 1%. It was the 10% of those who were getting salaries in six figures. Then those salaries began to grow into seven figures. Now they're 10 figures, billions, billionaires. The 1% is the people who are billionaires. Could there be some black folks in it? There might be an African or two. And of course, to me, they're not utilizing that billion wealth for the benefit and betterment of African people collectively. You know, they might give some donations here and there. They do that. I mean, you know, we see how philanthropic Tyler Perry has been. I'm not saying he's a billionaire. You know, there's been the brother who, can't remember what, how he made his, I think, hedge funds or something like that when he came to Howard University, not Howard, Morehouse, and told the class, the graduating class of 2019, that we're going to pay, you know, all your school debt, you know, which comes to some millions of dollars. But if you're a billionaire, just like that money this past weekend, you take the lump sum, you're going to have a half a, even though it's $1 billion, you're going to get a half $1 billion, $500 million. Imagine what our struggle could look like in that kind of sense. But hey, that's how it goes. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll talk more about economics, a subject which, of course, I know very little of because, you know, I ain't got no money. And what little money I do have, I try my best to make sure I can live, you know, because that's, I mean, after all, we are in America. You're America, you know. You're America. And so in America, it's about, you know, you got to have money. And that's just being real, you know. But America is no longer the world economic. Yes, in some instances, they use the American currency. But the yen and other currencies are, even, of course, the euro is stronger than the dollar. And, of course, other countries, except for Africa. That's why, to me, one of the things I will detest about Barack Obama is the murder of Muammar Gaddafi, along with Hillary Clinton, who I, well, you, if you listen to this program, you know I can't stand the damn Clintons. I've never liked the Clintons. Never. And then when you found out what they have done, particularly in Haiti, but her, and when she was Secretary of State, being all happy because they killed Muammar Gaddafi, some of the plan that she did, along with some European, particularly the French. And you know what the French has done in Africa, the British, you know, because had Muammar Gaddafi been able to do what he did, the clearly it wasn't the propaganda that you see on the nightly news about Libya and the dictator Muammar Gaddafi, No, that was fabricated, of course. Look up Libya and Muammar Gaddafi, what he did for the people. Look what he did for his people. He was revered. He was, and now Libya is a damn total mess. A total damn mess. So, we're going to be back. You stay with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was the Funkadelic, the P-Funk, Uncut, the Bomb. That's right, America Eats Its Young, and that tune is A Joyful Process. And that it is. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, African Perspectives, once again, is here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. This evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, with host Brother Jahad Ahmed. And then followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Maria Cambon and Nataki Cambon. Then followed by from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. On Saturdays, Black Talk, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. On Sunday at 7 p.m. on Sunday, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Getting back to the discussion of the power of economics. Now, I clearly understand that we need an economic system, but it's not necessarily the American dollar or the European, the euro or the pound or the franc or the yen, or any other currency. We must establish our own. Like I said, the economics in this country is so, I mean, the chasm is so huge. On average, brothers and sisters, Caucasians have $117,000 of wealth. We have $17,000. They have 10 times more. It was said that it is so out of whack that if Caucasians' economics were frozen from this point going forward, it would take over 230 years for there to be, and if our income was done, you know, incrementally, not monumentally, but just incrementally, over 230 years before there's equality, there's income, or financial equity. That's ridiculous. That's what I'm saying. It can never happen here. But this situation is not just in this country. It is a global situation for African people. That's why we must make the determination. I don't give a damn where we are. I don't care where we are. We are relegated to the bottom rung of everything, where we are. And if your skin happens to be brown or darker, you will surely, or if you happen to identify as African, truly. That's why there's some of us who are us, who may look somewhat like them, identify with them. And you will see that more and more in this country. What that has in store, we'll see. But I don't want to, you know I may live, not live to see that. And I'll argue against that. But you see it all the time on commercials, don't you? You see all the time children who are of a lighter hue because of a mother and a father. Mother more likely be African and father be European or Caucasian. You see that a lot. Mixish. It's a program, it's a situation comedy called Mixish. There's a, you know, what was it, Blackish,
then grownish, mixish. But here's this Caucasian, Howard Nicholas. Because see, even though Claude Anderson was talking about our situation here, and I'm quite sure he deals with this globally, I know I deal with this globally because it ain't here for us. Our situation is global and it's back home on the continent of Africa, the land that is inherently ours, that we can have a claim, that we could come together and go to whatever governing body, the Hague, the UN, whatever, and say to them, we are making this declaration that African people are going home. Africans on the continent, Africans in the diaspora have joined forces to run our land. We are demanding that everybody get their ass out. We will discuss negotiations on different levels. But what we're doing is we're preparing Africa to be one. There is not no Ghana. Yes, there's Ghana. Yes, there's Nigeria, but we're one Africa. Because it's not about Ghana or Nigeria or Cameroon or any other country. It is about Africa and Africans to forge a future for African people. And not just the Africans on the continent, but Africans in the diaspora. If you want to stay wherever you are, you stay. But you should know and feel good in the fact that you have a home. And you have a, and where that home is, it is developing into something that many Africans would truly want to be a part of. And we're going to be producing stuff. We're going to be competitive in the world. And this is what this Caucasian here, Howard Nicholas, is talking about and fearing of. Check it out.
Sub-Saharan Africa has been fundamental to the global prosperity of the advanced countries. Okay? And Africa had a role to play. It has a role as a raw material producer. We will not allow Sub-Saharan Africa to escape that. Okay? We do everything to keep Sub-Saharan Africa where it is, also impoverished. It's absolutely vital for the prosperity of everyone else. So let's get clear about that.
Welcome to My Africa TV speech series, where we bring you informative and educative speeches from Africans and for Africa.
So I must thank the Critical Collective again for inviting me. I thought they never would after the last bad thing that I said. I must have upset lots of people, I'm sure. Every time I make a presentation, I upset lots of people, but never the Critical Collective, so we must be thinking alike. I congratulate them, really. It's amazing to see so many people here. And I also congratulate scholars for linking again with Critical Collective. It's been some time, and I hope this partnership continues and flourishes, because this is just amazing to see the number of people. I have to apologize for two things. The first is, I have to apologize in advance. I'm not an expert on Africa. What I'm going to offer you, perhaps it's not enough, but it's some commonsensical observations. I hope it's common sense. But sometimes it's better not to be an expert, you know, to be able to see things from slightly afar. The second thing is, I'm wearing the wrong trousers. I was fixing my bike, so I wore my old trousers, and so please don't video this part, because my wife will immediately divorce me. Okay, so what I'm going to try and do is just give you some charts and a couple of tables, just to paint a little bit of a picture that you already know. Okay, so What this presentation is fundamentally designed to say is this. Africa historically, sub-Saharan Africa, has been fundamental to the global prosperity of the advanced countries. Okay? And Africa had a role to play. It has a role as a raw material producer. We will not allow sub-Saharan Africa to escape that. Okay, we do everything to keep sub-Saharan Africa where it is, also impoverished. It's absolutely vital for the prosperity of everyone else. So let's get clear about that. Okay, and this means all the economic structures, all the global institutions, and the economics we teach everyone is all designed to keep Africa exactly where it is. And whether it is Europe or US or now China, it's always the same. We need Africa to be impoverished because we need those raw materials and we need them dirt cheap. Okay, so that's the message. It doesn't mean to say that there's nothing Africans can do. Of course there is. Okay, but this is the opposition that they're fighting. This is what it's about. Because if Africa does do something different, I assure you living standards of all those in Europe and North America and Asia is going to fall. Okay? And that is a big price to pay. I assure you that the West is not going to allow that without a big fight. Okay? So this is what it's fundamentally about. What I want to show you is how these structures are operating. It's just 20 minutes, so we can't do very much, but just to give you a little bit of an idea. And why I keep the ideology part there is because we are part of the producers of ideology. At universities and academic institutions, we are complicit in this whole enterprise. Okay, so the job of many Western academics is to convince Africans they have to keep doing what they're doing. Okay? And to show them, it's your fault that you're poor. It's not our fault. It's your fault that you're poor. You know? So this is what we do in academic institutions. And I want to show that as well. We just start. This is what it's basically about, so you know what it's about. But I want to just show you the extent to which Africa is specializing in the production of raw materials and basic agricultural goods. We know the basic forces that have caused this underdevelopment. We know it's colonization. I will not discuss that very much because my colleague speaker is going to go into some aspects of this. But I do want to discuss the global economic structures, the global financial institutions, and economic ideology, briefly, to give you a flavor of those. Let me start with this. You can't really see it so easily, but if those of you who are interested, you want the PowerPoint, I'm sure we can make it available to you. But the thing that you really need to see is the top line. Okay? And the extent of dependency is captured by this statistic at the top. Okay? And you compare it with all other income groups, and what you see is essentially in that one statistic how dependent sub-Saharan Africa is on raw material production. Okay? This is the very heart of what makes sub-Saharan Africa beat. Okay? Here, just to have a look at one very important additional statistic, with all this export coming from sub-Saharan Africa, how much does sub-Saharan Africa account for in terms of global trade value? We know there are vast resources coming from there, but look at the bottom line in terms of global trade value. Look at that. 0.5% 1975, 0.95%, going down to 0.1, meaning that with all these vast resources being produced, How much are they getting for it? Nothing. Nothing. This is a very significant piece of data. Then I just want to show you what has happened to sub-Saharan Africa, because what we know, and from all studies, no country ever develops without manufacturing. Okay, producing raw materials will not take you anywhere. Producing basic agricultural goods will not take you anywhere. And let's have a look at how much manufacturing activity takes place in sub-Saharan Africa. We can look over the last 15, 20 years. And we see manufacturing has actually declined as a percentage of the total. This is percentages of total production in sub-Saharan Africa. How much of it is accounted for by manufacturing? So this figure here is 17% of the total. Most of the rest, when we talk of industry, it includes manufacturing, but the bulk of it is mining. Okay? Raw material extraction. This is the bulk of it. And here we see actually raw material extraction has stayed the same. What has caused industry to fall is the fall in manufacturing production. This is deliberate because we will never, as Western economists, as Western policymakers, we cannot afford to allow Africa to industrialize and start producing manufactures. Okay, so we will do everything to stop that. And I'm going to show you how we actually block that. It's obvious in certain ways, but it's less obvious in other ways. Now, we have actually seen periods of rapid growth in sub-Saharan Africa, misleading people, saying, oh, you know, we're now doing much better. And this has happened recently. Recently, I've had students come and tell me, we've done much better now. And you can see growth rates rose quite sharply in recent times. Now are starting to go again down. But if you look historically, the same thing happened earlier. Why? Because in these two periods, we had East Asian rapid industrialization processes. So in the earlier period, we had Japan and Korea and Taiwan. Okay, rapid growth, sucking in raw materials from Africa, driving up the prices, and then sub-Saharan African countries grew. Exporting raw materials, they grew. But after those countries finished industrialization, then sub-Saharan African growth rate again fell. Okay, but along comes China. Next wave. Okay, again, sub-Saharan African growth rises, but now China is going down. As many of you now know from the press, China is going down. But sub-Saharan Africa is going down even faster. And we're going to go back to where we were again, with very low prices of raw materials, very low growth rates, and again, the sorts of poverty that we saw once before. Because, bottom line, sub-Saharan Africa is condemned to this role. Just the supplier of raw materials, not a manufacturer. Very recent data showing emerging markets that produce raw materials against emerging markets that produce manufactures. And you can see now with the weakness in the global economy, it's the emerging markets, that's the red line, it's those countries that are suffering the most, the emerging markets producing raw materials. They're suffering the most. And here, it translates into their currencies being butchered. Okay? The currencies are collapsing of these countries, and many of them are sub-Saharan African countries. Some of them are Latin American countries, okay, who also rode that same wave. They thought that raw material production was going to save them. But now they're facing terrible problems. And I'm sorry to say, it's just going to get worse in the next 2 years. It's not going to get any better. And this is what it does in terms of gross domestic product. It's the blue line you should look at. It's the blue line compared with the red line.
Did you like our video or not? Please let us know in the comment section below. And don't forget to subscribe and click the notification button to get notification once our next video drops. Share this video with friends and family. And please let us know what you think in the comment section below.
That was Howard Nicholas in a presentation he gave, Why Africa Must Remain Poor. And I've heard it a number of times, and every time I hear it, I get more frustrated and angry with the arrogance and the boastfulness, but it is the truth. It is their truth. It is not ours. Our problem is that we agree with them. We have been trained to not think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us. So within those constraints, we think in a matter of their dictates. For those who have the opportunity to go to Africa and visit some African countries, to chance to travel around in Africa, as diverse as it is, there are some places you can go that you will feel very happy about going to, and the way things are progressing. There are some places you can go to that hurts you. It really hurts you, you know. But in terms of the continent itself, the production, there is none. Just like the Caucasians said, we will not allow them to produce anything. They can mine raw materials, and of course they have them. They have them in abundance, even though Africa has been raped now for centuries by the Europeans. It still has more mineral wealth than any place else. But we don't control it. And nor do we turn that mineral wealth into economic advantage for us to develop and produce. My prime example on a small level was when I was sitting in that cocoa farm. I don't call it a plantation. When you hear the word plantation, you have another. That's why I use words that I think that need to be, that we all should use words. Because when you say a word, it automatically puts an image or picture into your mind. Like when I say the word slave, we were not slaves. But if I say it, and what image do you conjure up? Yeah. So that's why I don't use that word plantation on that cocoa farm. When I'm sitting on that cocoa farm, and I understand and realize that all of this is going to Europe. It's going to England, is going to Belgium. Ugh, Belgium, you know, chocolate, you know, the chocolatiers, Cadbury's, Hershey's, Nestle's. And what's interesting, particularly in Ghana, those finished products on the heads of young brothers and sisters, and I mean young, when I was there back last year, in April, there was a lot of young people who were selling on the streets. Older sisters too, anybody else, because, you know, they have no safety net. They only have the ability to sell their products and goods that they get. And a lot of the finished products came from outside of Africa. It's just like brother and sister in One Africa, Sister Amakus. Her husband was Nana Kofu, who was a firefighter in New York. They came from New York and they moved to Ghana. They've been in Ghana now, I don't know, maybe 20-some years, maybe longer, because I met him in the 90s. you know. And I remember he passed. He passed. He got hit by a tro-tro in Accra, where they live in, they live, one Africa is right on the ocean in between Cape Coast and Elmina Dungeons, between the dungeons. You can see them. You can definitely see Elmina Dungeon and up the road. Not they live closer to Cape Coast Dungeon. And so one night, me and him were talking, and on the horizon at night, I seen these lights as a fishing vessel, big commercial fishing vessel. I asked, was it Ghanaian? And he said, no, it was Japanese. Well, it's not Ghanaian. You know, when I was in a country called, in a town called Winneba, also on my first time I was there, I was in Winneba. And it's right on the ocean. And believe me, if I had the money, I would transform that place. It was probably at one time a beautiful resort. But man, anyway, the brothers are out there fishing early in the morning from the shore. Some from small boats, not too far off the shore. But of course, that vessel is way out there. They have a big net, of course. And they're doing everything on that ship, bringing the fish in, processing it, freezing it, packaging it, the whole nine yards, sell some back to the Ghanaians. But, of course, where it's going is Japan, because there is no fish in the waters of Japan and all those islands of Japan. They fish. They have got rid of them. So they need fish. They need sustenance. I don't know what the deal is. No, all I know is that Africans have been constantly taken advantage of. Africans have been constantly manipulated and played. We need African leadership. We need African leadership on the continent, connecting with the diaspora, and saying to the world, this is no more. We don't have tribes. We are one Africa. We are one Africa. No matter where we live on the continent, even in the north, you cannot do in the north what is presently being done in Mauritania and Libya and so forth. And of course, in Egypt, that is us. That is ours. You want to maintain it? Here's the deal. You follow what we're saying, fine. If not, we'll figure out a damn way to get rid of your ass. But presently, right now, it's sad. It's pathetic. They're neutering men so they can send them off to Dubai and Abu Dhabi and United Arab Emirates. Neutering men. Enslavement, rape, and so forth. In so-called sub-Saharan Africa, there are still many conflicts, lots of ignorance and stupidity. Leadership is needed. Many neo-colonialists, many despots, men who just rape their country, who take in millions, invest them in banks in Europe, particularly in Swiss, in Switzerland, in other parts of Europe. If there's something wrong with them, they come here or they go to Europe because of their money. So when we talk about world economics, and you want to get in on this conversation, dial 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. If you're on, just hit star twice. Let me know that you want to be a part of this conversation. As you know, that sometimes I'm on this program and I get emotional. My voice rises, and I may say some choice words. Because when you look at what has happened to us, it makes you want to holler. It makes you want to holler and throw up both your hands. Nothing happened. And because of what has happened to us, nobody does to themselves what we do to us. It's like that on the continent, and it's surely like that here in the States, in these major cities, in these gangs and so forth. Every Saturday, every weekend in Chicago is pathetic. Baltimore, here in Atlanta. We as African people, this is a critical decade, I believe. We must make this decade the decade that African people stop being pawns in the world and became players. Because what they did, they came together. They unified. They believed in Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die. They began to understand and believe there was nothing more important than unifying African continent. Unifying African people. They understood that it was not that you were a Ghanaian or you were from the United States or you were from Brazil or you were from the Caribbean or you were from Ghana, Benin, Togo, whatever. You were African. If you identify with being African, we had now the ability to include and exclude. We had ability to exercise power. And power is the ability to define reality. That's what power is. Can we define reality? Can we shape reality in our image and in our interests? That's what power is. Power ain't no damn voting. It ain't money. It ain't education or information. Power is the ability to define reality. A group of people come together and say, this is reality. And we're going to impose it upon others. We're going to make them accept our definition as if it's their own. The question that we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in Europeans' reality? Well, first, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of, justifying our captivity, justifying doing what they had done to us. Then through many struggles, free from the physical captivity to an even deeper captivity, the mental captivity. The mental captivity is what we've been fighting and continue to fight. What I try to fight, trying to put something on our minds every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We are at war for the minds of our people. We have been warred upon, and because of our minds are so messed up, a lot of us don't have a damn clue. Just like in my favorite documentary, Watt Stack, there's that point and they talk to the brother. He says, I've been down so long that getting up don't even cross my mind. I've been down so long that getting up I can't even fathom that. I can't even picture that. I can't even visualize that. All I know is what I am and what I am here. The Caucasians said we got to keep Africa poor. We must make that a reality for them, as he stated. Because if we don't, we will be poor. We have no resources. They do. We will be poor. The exploitation of Africa by Europe made Europe rich. The exploitation of Africa for its humans, us, and for our resources, for the colonization, I mean, there's some, I mean, because of what you've been, I have no desire. Yes, I would love to go to the museum and see all of the artwork and all of the statue, all the things they've stolen and still don't want to give back, or we'll loan them to you. Told Ethiopia, all that info, we'll loan them to you. The arrogance of these people. There is no justice in them. There's no righteousness in them. They're evil. They are evil. And you can't compromise with evil, brothers and sisters. We have the ability. We have the ability to get ourselves up and out of this. The question becomes, do we have the will? That's why I put the emphasis on that word. That's why Marcus Garvey put emphasis on that word. Up, you mighty people. You can accomplish what you will. Do you have the will? Just like at the end of the program, Bibi Fahodiye is our victorious destiny, and we will be victorious. Will. It is here for us. But we keep fighting these local ass problems, these local, city, county, state, United Snakes, Europe, Caribbean, South America, Central America, wherever else, problems, and not dealing with the real problem of Africa being united, a united African states. Join the Pan-African Federalist Movement. I play that piece all the time about what it's about us coming together and doing what we should be doing for ourselves. I play it all the time. If you want to join this conversation, hit star twice. I have a caller here. Good afternoon. 447, good afternoon. Brother Paul.
Good afternoon, good morning to Baba Ochi.
Hey, Brother Paul, how are you?
Well, Baba Ochi, I just have to state very clearly, I'm alive. So
there it is.
If I'm alive, I can do better.
That's
the
right.
Better I must do.
That's right. If I'm alive, I have another day to do better. Take it as such, man. I agree. Same here.
Yes, Baba.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many people are dropping out for one reason or the other. And, you know, it's been quite close to home. But death is part of the process. I actually read a book called Death is Part of the Process. And it was a book based on the struggle by the ANC in South Africa. It was a very interesting book.
Okay.
Yeah. Death is Part of the Process. And it basically sum it up, explain that their revolution was based on guerrilla warfare and hitting the enemy where it couldn't see.
Right.
And where it didn't feel. That was the premise of the book. It was quite interesting, their struggle to overthrow their European oppressors in South Africa.
Yeah. And still weren't able to do it, although they came up with the, the compromise. You know, but they still were not able to do it because South Africa, Europeans still control. Europeans still running it. You know, my contention is, Brother Paul, if you have control of the finance, the money, and you have control of the military, you in control. You're in control. You know? And so for those who understand that, they understand that in Namibia as well, the Germans are still in control. In many other countries that are supposed to be free, the French are in control, especially if the money you have is controlled by somebody else. If you're not in control of the finance, and that's why I mentioned earlier why they felt the West had to kill Muammar Gaddafi. Because he was proposing a gold coin, the gold dinar has a continent-wide currency to deal with the materials that Africa has and its future in development. See? And so the West said, no, we cannot have that. We got to get rid of him. Here in this country, I don't know about how he was perceived in the UK, or they had on the national news many times the image of him being a crazed individual who was killing its citizens, imprisoning its citizens, having the citizens impoverished while he lived a life of luxury, him and his sons and so forth. And none of that was true. None of that was true. The Libyan people loved Muammar Gaddafi because with the mineral wealth, and particularly the oil, he did things for the people. You get an apartment when you and you get a family, and you get an apartment rent free, and gas prices very low. All kinds of positive things that they did for the Libyan people, and now Libya's a damn mess. I put that on the blood is on the hands of Barack Obama. Libyan blood is on the hands of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Blair. I think Blair was Tony Blair was in at that time. I don't know, one of those British prime ministers sanctioning that. Of course, the French as well. You know, it's.
It's interesting what you say about Colonel Gaddafi. And I don't want to stroke too much of the point I was going to make earlier on, but
sure, please make it.
One thing you may not know, or you may have forgotten, Colonel Gaddafi was one of the biggest supporters of the IRA. Colonel Gaddafi was the person who was supplying the IRA with arms. And allowing the IRA to military tackle the British Army. It was Colonel Gaddafi, and it was a well-known fact, and he didn't hide it. So when you say how he was portrayed on English TV, it was a well-known fact that the British's adversaries, who are the Irish, and their military arm called the IRA, Colonel Gaddafi was the main supplier of their weaponry. So the way the British saw them, or Colonel Gaddafi, he was supplying terrorists,
okay,
as they label it, terrorists.
Right.
And this has been going on for a long time.
Sure.
I mean, if my memory serves me right, and from my research, it was the British who allowed Colonel Gaddafi to overthrow the aristocracy in Libya. It was the British who helped him to overthrow them. Mm-hmm. So the point I'm trying to make is this. This is just a game. They helped him to overthrow the aristocracy which existed in Libya. And then when he decides to go his own way, they decide to out him.
Right.
And you can see the same pattern. Sure. You can see the same pattern, sure, in the same pattern in Iraq with Saddam.
Right. Saddam Hussein, yeah.
It was the CIA that made him,
right,
and,
exactly.
And the CIA, mm-hmm, who backed and put him in power, Saddam Hussein. And when he decided that Kuwait was part of Iraq, they decided, no, we want Kuwait as a separate entity, and declared that he's a terrorist. He was involved in 9/11 or whatever nonsense. And then they took over the country. And this is the pattern. This is the behavior. This is the terroristic behavior, which is part of their playbook. It's just, mm-hmm, a common part of their playbook.
Mm-hmm.
The point I was going to make earlier on in economics, I raise an argument, which I don't get. 99% of the people don't agree with. But this is how I put it. This thing they call economics, for me personally, it's just like a religion. It's just like Christianity. It's just like Islam. It's just an ideology.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really real. It's just an idea. Yeah. And when you study some of the theorists, such as his name tells me something, Smith, one of their gurus. He talks about, he came up with a theory of quantitative easing and all these economic theories. By the way, economics in Latin means home management. That's what it means. My argument is this, is that your home management, the way you manage your home, is not going to be the same way I manage my home. But if I come and impose on you the way I manage my home and I impose that on you, then it's going to be difficult. And what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is this. This thing called economics, right? America, right, through the Federal Reserve. Every country in the world has to have an account with the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. Every country. You can't do international trade unless you have an account with the Federal Reserve. You can't do international trade unless you're trading in dollars. Now, to me, how the hell are you going to outwit a system where somebody else is controlling the currency? How are you going to outwit that? It's right. Impossible. It's absolutely impossible. So when we talk about this thing called economics, it's an absolute con. Because if you are controlling the currency and I can't do anything outside what you suggest are the rules, then how the hell do I win? How?
You
how
don't.
Is that possible?
You don't, because it is my
you
game.
You can't win.
Right, you can't.
You can't. You can't win. So for me personally, I don't really get much support here. Economics is a total nonsense ideology. And for us as Africans, right, we have to reconfigure. We have to come with new terms and new strategies based on our history, our legacies, our own ideologies. Instead, and, you know, not to be funny, right, but the London School of Economics, the LSE, is supposedly the most prestigious, the head guru for economics in the world, the London School of Economics, right? I know one person who's been there, right? He's Tony Warner. He's now a historian. You might have heard of him. He's a historian. He's a very good historian, African-centered historian.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He went to the London School of Economics. He's the only person I know who went there.
Is he in the UK still?
Yeah, he's been in America many times. I mean, he's a good friend with Ranel Khurshidi.
Okay.
Ranel Khurshidi knows him well.
Okay.
They're good friends. And, you know, he's got a lot of good books. But he went to London School of Economics, and he's not an economist. He's a historian. What does that say about this theory called economics? But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that we have to revolutionize our thinking. We can't go along with these Eurocentric templates and think they're going to work for us. I mean, the reality of it is right, this guru, Smith, he said that whenever a country starts printing money, which is better known in economics as quantitative easing, the next stage after that is war. The only reason why the world isn't at war right now, is because every country is printing money. America prints more money than anybody.
That's true.
Right? Prints more money than anybody, okay? And he said that when a country starts doing that, the next stage is war, full-out war. The only reason we're not at war is because they're pulling all these stunts. They're pulling, like this pandemic and all this nonsense, and these distractions like Donald Hitler, Mussolini, Trump, the dumb. All these total, absolute distractions. They're total distractions to keep the people off the real thing, what's going on, that the world is totally bankrupt, okay? The economy, this thing they call the economy, is never worked in 1926 when you had the Great Depression. And from 1926 to now, it's still not worked. And they use diversion. They use the media. They use the press. They use social engineering, psychological warfare, to keep the people distracted from the fact that their game is not working. It works for some, 1%, who are robbing and stealing through this thing called economy. So when that presentation you played, and he said one thing which sticks out for me, he says that they will never allow Africa, right?
Yes.
To get on its feet without a fight.
Yes.
He said that.
Yes.
Without a fight.
Yes.
Right? And the one thing we do not want to talk about, we really don't want to talk about, is how we are going to fight. We don't want to talk about that.
Right. How are we going to fight this evil entity? And we must.
I know that he's right. They will fight. And we don't really want to talk about, not even with each other, any strategy for how we are going to fight. And that for me personally, is a big problem. It's a massive problem because I know in my heart they're going to fight.
Yeah.
And if we ain't got a plan to fight, then we might as well say we're ready to go back into slavery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel, Baba Ochi.
No, Brother Paul.
I'm waiting for arguments to convince me otherwise. I've heard a lot. Oh, well, you can't talk about, always talk about violence and all this nonsense, yeah? Look, I know my adversary. I know they're going to fight. They're going to fight with all they got. And if you ain't got a plan to fight back, well, then forget it.
You know, there is no doubt in my mind that they will not allow us to secede from the clutches mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever, religiously. That's really where they have us at the moment, from through their religion, you know. And this is a mental struggle, and for us, we must release this vice grip that these crackers have on our minds. That's the first and big thing. And then from that particular point, we can develop the strategies and train for us to fight, because it's going to be a fight. It's going to be a fight. And the sad part is, it not here in America, not in the UK, not in Europe, not anywhere else, but on African soil is where we need to be. And that is for our fight. I wouldn't lift a damn finger in any struggle here in this damn country. All these talk of a race war. I give less than a rat's ass about these Caucasians and a damn race war here. I wouldn't. But on the continent, I would fight to the death. I would fight till I can't fight no more.
Can I just say this?
Sure. Yeah, we only got a minute. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, so just for the sake of clarity, when I say fight, I mean in any level.
Yes,
whether it
right.
be physical, mental, social, whatever,
right.
whatever. They just develop the mentality for a fight. That's what I mean. And
yes.
I totally agree with you when I talk about mental. But unfortunately, when you test some individuals, they haven't even got the mental capacity to fight.
Man, just like I told you, that one brother from the documentary Wattstack, which is my favorite, that is when the Watts riots happened back in 65, 7 years later in 72, Stack Records out of Memphis went to Los Angeles and put on a concert to benefit Watts, you know, where they did an outstanding documentary of the Watts, Stack's Records people, Isaac Hayes and so forth, and Rufus Thomas, Carla Thomas, the Barquets, but also to the people of Watts and talking with them. And they had that one brother, he said, I've been down so long that getting up don't even cross my mind. I was like, damn. But that's what they have done to us. They've beaten us down so much and so much mentally that we can't even fathom, we can't even visualize, we can't even contemplate getting up and doing for self. But we must. We have to, and we will. You know. Brother Paul, I appreciate you, man. How have you been?
Well, like I say, I'm alive. You know, we've had some bad luck in the family. Someone passed away quite young. And,
oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
You know, but, you know, we just got to give fortune for life. That's all. And we've got a battle ahead. That's what we've got to do. We've got to fight back. And,
okay.
You know, as long as we're alive, we can do better. That's it, Brother Ochi.
I hear you. I hear you. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you, Paul. And thank you all for...
Thank you for giving me the time.
Always. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources, as you have heard today, lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell damn it don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Vahodie. Bibi Vahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will
be victorious. Hope to see you on Wednesday. You have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Peace.